going to do like the Tzedakah communal
chiyuv. Yeah, that's, which is very related to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Rosh Hashanah B'nai Ayir also is related to that. If you're talking about communal taxation.
Yeah.
All those are good principles. The question is, are those the necessary solution? Okay. Yeah, maybe should I make one more comment? No, just remind me later. I have another comment about this. I'll come back. All right. So we've been discussing Pshara versus Din. We've been looking at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Vava, Mebez. Three views about Pshara versus Din. Let's just go through these shitos very carefully. So we have the Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Vav. We have Rabbi Elazar ben Yosha b'Yosi Aglili. He says it's usher to do Pshara. B'chol abotzeh harei zechote. Yes? So why is someone who does Pshara a chote? We saw a few formulations. The Piskei Rid said it's a form of gezel. Is that right? Shabitzua hu gezel. Shalokech mizeh v'nosein lezeh shalokedin. Everybody see that formulation of the Piskei Rid? To do Pshara, to rob somebody of the rights they're entitled to under din, that's a form of theft. Now, I'm very interested in teasing out the dialectic between the view that holds that pshara is a mitzvah and the view that holds that pshara is usur, specifically as a form of gezel. So pshara equals gezel. That's the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Yosha b'Yosi Aglili. Now, this proposition is clearly too strong. So what does it mean? In what case is pshara gezel? So last time, on Tuesday, we described it as, look, you have rights under halacha. This is what the law would entitle you to. If a dayan were to give you anything less than that, he's robbing you of your halachic rights. Now, there's a very important qualification here that's implicit in the Gemara itself. Anybody? So is pshara always gezel according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yosha b'Yosi Aglili? He himself quotes, Aaron was oev shalom v'rodev shalom, mesim shalom inam l'chavero. So how do you make sense of the quote-unquote Aaron value, who seems to have been doing pshara? You could see Rashi here says explicitly, once Aaron heard that there was a machlokas, before they would come to din, he would pursue them to be matil shalom. So how do you make sense of this? Yeah, Ned? What? Okay, so that's a very important qualification, because this view holds that kodem din, it's not gezel. You see that? So I think it's a little too strong to say that your halachic rights are determined before the din. At most, even the view that holds that pshar is a form of gezel acknowledges that it wouldn't be gezel before you come to adjudicate. You see that? So per se, there's no problem of imposing pshara. But for some reason, it becomes gezel once they come to you for litigation and you try to move towards a settlement. Yeah, just remind me your first name. I know. Doe Pfeiffer, right?
Yeah.
So the implication here is that Moshe, who is acting as the judge, put me wrong, but Aaron, who is sort of acting not in a legal capacity of retrieval from foreign, but sort of...
Well, let me just push back on that. Let me just push back on that before you go further.
Yeah.
Notice Rashi here. Rashi says, Aval Aaron, Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. V'kivan ch'hoye shamea machlokas b'neyem kodem she'evo lifanav. Who's the subject of lifanav with the sofit of
They're Aaron.
What?
Aaron.
Yeah, meaning before they come to Aaron for adjudication. So I don't think it's true to say that Moshe was functioning as a dayan and not Aaron. Even Aaron was functioning as the dayan, but he would head off before they came to litigate. Do you agree? Remind me your first name again?
Dove,
you agree?
In Rashi, certainly, I'm confused if anyone says...
Says otherwise. Yeah.
So I'm putting it to an alternative... It seems to me that it could be an alternative explanation, but I don't see...
Yeah, sure. So it could be that it's someone who's not a Dayan, but I'm saying within Rashi, it sounds that even the Dayan, like, he's permitted to do this kodem shevo lefanav ledin. So that's, I think, a very important limitation or qualification of the view that holds that pshara is gezel, right? So there's something about... moving away from litigation when you're supposed to litigate that makes it gezel, but it's not objectively determined that these are the rights that he has. Now, to flesh this out a little further, so I asked last time, what exactly is the debate between the view that holds pshara as a mitzvah and the view that pshara is gezel. Right, what are they disagreeing about? Ned said something, why does the view that hold that pshara is mitzvah, why are they not concerned that it's gezel? Right? Yes? And what did Ned answer? Ned said, well, you're getting the consent of the parties. But remember that I don't think the view that holds pshara is gezel disputes that. Right? He also, you know, would say that pshara requires the consent of the parties, which we'll see later on. So it sounds like even if you are talking about pshara, trying to persuade the parties to agree to pshara, there's a dispute as to whether that constitutes gezel. Right? So then what are they arguing about? If you limit the debate to that. Yeah, Josh.
It's about how strongly this, like, theoretical objective right through din you have, whether or not that's actually considered that, like, that's your money that can be stolen.
Right? Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, right? So I think it actually does come back to how, let's say, metaphysically determined your rights are prior to a court getting involved, right? Or at the stage that a court gets involved, but prior to Gemar Din, right? So is it somehow right to say before you litigate, before you come to court, that you have rights X, Y, and Z under halacha that a court is denying you of? And one way of thinking about this is to think about the role of courts as external to the system of law who just enforcing that system. That's like sometimes... judges say we're just umpires, right, calling balls and shots, right, as if like, there's a fact of the matter and we're just a camera trying to determine yes and no, versus saying, the law itself is indeterminate before the courts decide how it applies to the case. So I do think that that's probably the best way of explaining what's going on in this debate. What role does the system of law itself require judicial decision-making to determine how the law is applied to the case? Or is the law assumed to apply to the case in a certain way, and the courts are just the ones who, you know, discover exactly how it gets applied? Does everybody see that? Yes? Okay, so we're going to come back to that distinction in a moment. Okay, so now that's the view that pshara is gezel. There's pshara is aser. There's also a view that pshara is a rishus. That's Shimon ben Manasseh's view in Sanhedrin Vav Mem Beis. And then we have the view of Rabbi Shua ben Karcha that pshara is a mitzvah because it's mishpat sheyesh bo shalom. Yes? Okay. How do we make sense of the view that pshara is a mitzvah? So basically what I want to say, and we'll say a little more later on, the best way to conceptualize this view is that what really matters is to resolve the dispute. That's really what a lot of these dinim are about. That's the role of courts. And if you could get the parties on board to resolve their dispute in a peaceful way, that's always better than trying to figure out how the din applies. So it's almost like the din is a way of enforcing the rights of the parties when they have a dispute. But if the parties themselves are on board for a pshara, that's an even better type of resolution. Mashal l'maha davar doma. So what's a good metaphor for thinking about this? If Zachariah and I are in a legal dispute and we could just resolve it amongst ourselves, there's no mitzvah for us to litigate. Right? It's not like the Torah has a peda that you go to Beis Din with every claim. Beis Din's a tool to resolve disputes. So to pshara, you know, just instead of Zachariah and I resolving it amongst ourselves, we hire the Beis Din to figure out a mutually acceptable resolution for us. Does that make sense to you guys? Yeah? Yes? Good? From me?
So on that view, the Beis Din is not, there's no din in any case, then?
What do you mean there's no din in any case?
You're not saying... Shara is what you do is ideal, and so if you can settle out of court, you settle out of court. But if you can't do Shara, then we go to the backup with the din.
Yeah, if you frame it that way, you're right. Almost that mitzvah lived soa means that it's that's the primary way of resolving disputes.
I would
right?
Say another way to say it is to say you should should
resolve the disputes.
Yeah, if you can, it becomes a basis who will solve your disputes, who will resolve your disputes, which makes it almost like even invasion that's also kind of
sure. So do you guys see what Rumi's saying is, so you have a dispute, right? What's the Torah's perspective on disputes? So the first thing you should do is resolve it amongst yourselves. That's like, there's no mitzvah to just sue people in Bezdin. Do we agree on that? Yeah. So, number two, if you can't resolve it amongst yourself, resolve it via an impartial mediator. Right? Bezdin functioning as Pshara. You should know social contract theorists like John Locke. So they say the reason why societies have courts is just because ideally everybody, when they're in a fight, they would resolve it on their own. But you're so no-gab-a-davar when it's your own fight that you always think you're right. So you just need a third party to decide rights and wrongs. Right? It's not about justice in some broad sense. It's just you need somebody who's not no-gab-a-davar, literally just like an impartial third party to tell you what the proper, a good resolution is. So resolve via an impartial arbitrator, or whatever, mediator, that's Pshara, through Bezdin. You might even say, Zacharia, this is like Pshara Chutzla Bezdin. Right, Romi, right? This is Pshara Chutzla Bezdin. Literally, Mechila, right? And then if you can't do that, then like the halacha gives you a very robust system of law to figure out, you know, who has what rights in each case.
Yeah. So is that what you're saying? As opposed to saying, number one is number one, and number two is really good.
Correct. So this is a good way of explicating what I'm saying. Yeah. Clear, everyone? Yeah. Obvious to you? Yeah, good. I mean, I don't think this is the way we typically think of things. I think a lot of yeshiva guys think that in the ideal world, din would reign supreme on all disputes. Yes? Yeah, like you're an halachic man of din. Your job is to bring din into the world as much as possible and resolve everything according to din. I think that's one thought about how the halacha should work. This picture inverts that. Yes, Rami? Yeah, Ariel?
Yeah, I guess what's the, when a person's supposed to resolve, if we're not saying wrong straight to din, what is he supposed to be working on in his head? Meaning, what's the logic he's supposed to base himself off of? Like, I would assume he's supposed to base it off of the din that he thinks is correct.
You think so?
What he's
sometimes it's like, regardless who's right, just, you know, make peace. Move on. Is that an impossibility? I tell my kids that all the time, right? That was my metaphor last time. They're fighting over something, and there are all these arguments made about who's in the right and who's in the wrong. And from my perspective, it doesn't matter. We just want to live, we want to coexist peacefully. Right? So who cares that he had it yesterday? Who cares that you got it first? Who cares that I was nice to him yesterday and not you, right? Just, you know, figure out a resolution and move on.
But shouldn't a person's rights and wrong be formed conceptually out of din?
Well, it's not always about rights and wrongs. Maybe it's just about what's good for everyone. Is that too radical for you to wrap your mind around? Yeah? So you're that yeshiva bacher paradigm. Is anybody sympathetic to Ariel's problem? Romy, you're sympathetic?
Because you have to be able to also say that what if they show up and someone is actually wrong?
Okay, so that's why if you exhaust one, you exhaust two, then you have...
I guess you just have to clarify that if it's exhausting. It doesn't mean you put it in constant resolution. It just means that wouldn't be... It's not exactly an order of priority, because we don't say, oh, we should resolve it, and we should resolve it, and we're within. We say, in this case, it's not right to resolve it. Could it come to some resolution, maybe?
I think the beauty of one and two is that they're not about rights. Right? You're putting aside the whole question of who's in the right and who's wrong.
Yeah, but then it's almost like the din really comes first. Really, you should first decide if someone was right or wrong. If no one's right or wrong, then you should resolve it.
Arguably, you shouldn't care if someone's right or wrong.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. It really is...
So you get into a car accident, okay? You could just say, I don't care about the fender bender, it's all good, right? For me, it's a covet to have more knocks on my car, right? That's number one.
Right. So then,
if you're already a stickler, you need to sue the guy to make $100 to get a new fender.
The reason I'm sympathetic to our position then is because the idea that we're never begin, there's never a case where someone is actually wrong, is only the Dina Mamas, I guess we're saying?
Yeah, I'm talking Dina Mamas here.
So then, I guess, possibly, saying you should, Torah say, the Halakha is saying, you should always...
Yeah, right. That's one way of thinking about it. Not that you always have to, maybe that's preferable. If it costs you nothing to resolve it peacefully, then that's preferable.
And once you get to the second stage, can't basically just decide that can happen. How does stage two fail?
Why does this fail?
How could it?
Oh, if the parties won't agree to this.
But if it's basic, why do they have to agree?
Because the parties have to agree to Pshara.
Yeah,
right? That's what we're going to see in a minute.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So let's now talk about this mitzvah of pshara. The Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Karcha holds a mitzvah of pshara. Then the Gemara qualifies it. What's the Gemara's qualification on Sanhedrin Vav Amid Beis? What does it mean, mitzvah lefasher? Wherein consists the mitzvah? Ariel?
In the pshara itself.
Not in the pshara itself. Daniel? In the offering of pshara, correct? And then you get a whole machlokes in the Achronim, or in some Rishonim, about what does that mean? Mitzvah lemeimar lehu, idina b'isu ipshara b'isu. So the idea is that people come to litigate. The mitzvah of pshara, the Gemara qualifies for b'shuv and karacha, doesn't mean that dayanim should always push for pshara. It means that when somebody comes for litigation, you should offer them the possibility and say, hey, do you want to do pshara maybe? Okay? Now, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this. Shulchan Aruch and Siman Yad Beis. Siman Yad Beis is all about pshara. And the Shulchan Aruch writes, mitzvah lomar labali dinim b'tchila. So it's a mitzvah to say to them when they arrive at din, hadin atem rotzim o hapshara. Do you want din or pshara? Imratu bipshara osim pshara osim beinam pshara. So notice the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the mitzvah here is to offer the possibility of pshara, and notice that the parties have to consent. The Beis Din doesn't have jurisdiction to do pshara without the agreement of the parties to do pshara. Everybody see that? Yes. Okay. So that's what we're going to get back to in a moment. Nadia, do you have a comment on this?
Yeah. We'll see. That's
not the
Dayanim, that's the
Validate,
right?
No, it's the Dayanim. Yeah, Osim Beinehem. You do for them Pshara. Or you work out a, you broker a Pshara.
They could also do it themselves.
I don't think so. I think the subject of Osim is the Dayanim. That's my sense. The Taz here qualifies this. And he says, Lidina, when the Shulchan Aruch paskins this mitzvah, Lipshara, what is the mitzvah? Literally just to offer the option. And it's rare that you get a Maharal Miprag who cited Lahalacha. Here, the Taz quotes the Maharal Miprag. And he says, Nira she'ein lirdof kol kach achar hapshara. There's no mitzvah to pursue pshara, it's just to give them the option. This coheres nicely with Zechariah's reading of Rashi in Sanhedrin that we saw in the last year. Right? You shouldn't be rodef after pshara more than din, nor should you be rodef after din more than pshara. So, you know, the halacha is equal between these two possibilities, but it does want you to offer, if somebody comes for litigation, you should offer them pshara. The Piskei Arid agrees with the statement, the proposition of the Maharal Miprag. What does he say? He says, Lav hachi kamar shemitzvah al-dayanim lachzer v'litroach achar pshara. It doesn't mean that you should try to do pshara if the parties don't want it. It just means that there's a mitzvah al hadayanim livtsoa im rotzim bali hadinim umisratzim bipshara, then mitzvah aleim letroach ulefashram v'lo sheheim yachtzirim al hapshara. So what's the view of the Tosas Rid? What's his view? Wherein lies the mitzvah? In doing it if they want it. Right? That's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to give them the option, and then if the parties opt for pshara, to pursue it. Okay, some achronim read the Shulchan Aruch. So those are, I would say, weak readings of mitzvah lifta. I'll take hands in 1 second. The Tur says, mitzvah ledayin lahaschil lahem bipshara. So you should open up with pshara. Okay, that's consistent with what the Gemara says. But the Drisha here comments and says, what this means is, de mitzvah lehader achar hapshara, uladaber alei bale dinim, ula yefashru kihia tov lahem. So what is the mitzvah consistent according to the Drisha? Hasbir lahem shahapshara adifa yoser. explain to the parties that, you know, Judaism prefers pshara. And that's why you should open up with pshara, me'achar shehi adifa. V'chein yomar kol dayin b'lashono v'hazbaraso l'hadiyah shepshara nichatvei. Right, so every dayan should try to explain to the parties that pshara is the halacha's preferable way of resolving dispute. So the prisha, the drisha, is the, I would say, the most radical formulation lehalacha of the manner in which we prefer pshara. Yes? Does everybody see that? So it's not neutral, but this is actually what you should pursue and try to persuade the parties to agree to do. Ned and then Eitan.
So this question
is
going to be better, but is he? It sounds like you're. This is an act of you're convincing them.
Yeah.
It's not really.
You're trying to convince the parties to not do din, but rather to give the bezdin the license to do pshara for them.
So what happens to din? Like, what's the purpose of din then?
Whenever the parties don't agree to do pshara, it's a backup.
But why is what is the value of pshara such that it should be a din in this case?
What's the value of not litigating?
Right.
Yeah. So anybody want to offer an answer to Ned, Benji?
I think, granted, it might not be as shalom based as number one, where you come to the resolution with yourself. But the dayanim are there to maximize shalom, even if not everyone's super happy with the result.
That's right. You could get more peace, arguably, through pshara. Sometimes, remember, shneim niftarim kireim, or they could leave happy. You could speculate also and say, like, litigation's costly. I don't know. It takes a long time. You got to hear all the arguments. Maybe pshara also requires that sometimes, but it's kind of a more flexible way of making everyone happy. You're not okay with that?
Din cannot make people happy.
The thought is that din succeeds less in making people happy than pshara does. I think that's clearly the thought. You don't think that's true?
No,
yeah, I think that's clearly the underlying. That's why the Gemara characterizes it as Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom. And that's why it's Bein Isha Bein Re'ehu, Bein Re'ehu Ishneim Niftarim Kireyim. Right? So it succeeds in making a better peaceful society than Din does. Yeah?
So what's the job of Din? What's it doing?
The job of Din is that Shara doesn't always work. Right, sometimes they won't agree to do pshara, so they have rights.
So a lack of pshara is going to create a greater lack of shalom than if it was present.
Yeah, that's one way of saying it. And then also saying, I think you sometimes need din in order to do a good pshara, because you have to have a sense of the equities, right? Who's in the right?
So it's just it informs ideologically.
Yes, right. It's a certain, it creates the benchmark for doing a good pshara. That's what we discussed in the last year, I think. Right? That din could be significant even in doing pshara because you need some antecedent conception of who's in the right and who's in the wrong. Right? Eitan and then Romy.
Yeah, so we saw later that if they decide to do din, they can go back and do pshara after. But
yes!
What about
that famous Riaz?
Yeah, what about agreeing to do pshara and one person's not happy with what they did decides? Can they go up there?
No. Once you agree and you're locked into pshara, you can't reverse it. Otherwise, pshara would have no teeth, right? It would be useless. Yeah. Poskim are clear about that. Yeah. Romy, you had a quick in a hand?
Yeah, just a quick one. Do you assume that the shidduch that say that you should call it mitzvah offer and the shidduch that say it's mitzvah to carry out if they want it are the same treatment?
It's interesting. Meaning the difference between that taz and the rid. I think there are certainly different formulations, and the Rid is saying there is actually a mitzvah to do pshara once they consent to it. Maybe the Taz is not committed to that. Right? It could just...
Interesting. I was going to say the Rid that for the Rid, you don't have to actually offer anything. It's just they decide they want to do it, they need to do it. Like, is Bayesian supposed to weigh in on whether or not you should...
Uh-huh.
Like, are they even allowed to talk? Like, making a suggestion like that.
Right. Here he says, Hilkach sholen osanem rotem lehispasher. So it's just like a consequence of this mitzvah, rather than the mitzvah consisting of.
Right, I guess. It's not such
a,
you still have to ask.
Right, so the writ is clear that you do have to ask.
Right.
As a consequence, it's derived from there being a mitzvah to do pshara if they want it.
Right, I guess there's not
right, so I don't see a strong enough kamina there. Josh.
Yeah,
Are you sure that like Shara Adifa Yoter is like so strong that it's like it's Judaism's preferred way? I thought it was more like, you know, it's better for you guys. Like, you think it's like Judaism's preferred way to do Shara? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
No, let's look at it carefully. So he says, the mitzvah lahadir achar pshara, so it's a mitzvah to pursue pshara, and to persuade the Bali dinim to do pshara ki hu hatov lahem. So you're saying that's just for them. Okay. But then he says, hasbir lahem sheha pshara, explain to them that pshara is preferable. So here I'm reading this preferable in like Jewish law, not just to them. Nicha tfei. So you're saying maybe just nicha tfei for them? Yeah. So you're trying to go for a par of reading.
I think it's a very hot take to say, like, oh, Judaism is like, no, sure, over there.
Yeah, you think it's too much of a hot take?
Otherwise, I don't know, why do we even give them the right to deny Shara then if it's that much better? Unless you say that forced Shara is basically not Shara anymore.
But, yeah, right. You don't want to beat them, you don't want to rob them of their rights. You just want to persuade them to give up their rights. Right, so that's the Shara, it's a little softer than saying, we're just going to take them away from you.
Right.
Although what we'll see later on, when in the cases where there's no din, then Shara becomes automatic. It's an interesting question what's happening there, right? So Josh gives us a deflationary reading of the Jerisha, right, Josh?
I guess.
Who agrees with Josh's reading? Anybody? No, Romy, you're not persuaded by it?
No.
You think he's the hot take?
I mean, yeah, you want him to be, so.
Yeah, we need the Shita. That. Yeah, but it's an interesting point that Josh raises, whether this is all, you know, better for them or it's better simpliciter and therefore we're persuading them. Yeah.
I mean,
Shmuel and then Meg. Fine. Yeah, it was both of you at the same time.
We spent a lot of time discussing
this
Drisha.
This Drisha?
Yeah.
So you're Doresh on the Drisha.
Yeah.
And did you come out like Josh or against Josh?
So I think we read it against Josh. I think Josh's objection is sort of my intuition as well, or it solves my problem.
Okay.
Not that it solves it.
What's your problem?
It's
too radical?
When I read it, yeah, I read it, and like I view Diana as like a used car salesman. And that's not something you're going to appreciate as a Diana.
Why does Shara make them used car salesmen?
Like, I read it, and he's like, yeah, they come into basement, and they want one thing.
Sorry.
We want to do din.
The litigants.
The litigants. They come to basement and they want to do din. Come into a car lot and I want to buy a simple Toyota Sienna. And then the car salesman like tries to sell me. I'm like, oh, this is so great. And the only way to resolve it is what Josh does with Josh's point. Like, that's the point. Judaism objects.
First of all, the analogy is so unflattering. Because you can make the same analogy in a flattering way, right? Imagine you go to the store and you want to buy a used car and the guy says, look, I have this new product, right? A brand new car for the exact same price. Take this better car. Why does it have to be a sleazy salesman trying to give you an inferior product?
By definition, it's a different price.
It's a different product, but it's a better. The argument here is that it's a better product.
I read the Trisha, that's exactly what I thought. I didn't have to think around to find a sleazy comparison. The Washington he gave me, like when I read it, like,
oh, this is better. But I was like, maybe it actually is better. The used car salesman is sleazy because he's trying to sell you an inferior product.
It's not better for the individual, it's better for the system.
Right.
Well, John. Like, you're here for Pfizer. James, one shot.
All the other presentations, it's like a regular salesman. I come in, oh, did you consider Pshara? Like, Pshara's a good option. Oh, you don't want to do Pshara? Okay. But this guy keeps going at it, until, like, they give in and buy
it. So you're saying Josh is partial consolation if it's actually better for the party.
Right, and that, like, resolves it. It's still not great imagery, and I still think it's hot
tip. Yeah, it's interesting. I would say that's where the cost thing comes in, because like in real business stuff, that comes up all the time, where it's like, we could litigate, but it's expensive, and it takes a long time, and it's a headache, and you're going to end up spending more on legal fees than you'll get back through winning, so why don't you just settle this, and everyone can walk away happy.
Right, so if they presented all the other presentations, showing up, and it's like, we'll bring it up, and if they don't want it, fine, but
it is
your job.
The persuasion here is what troubles
you. Also, like, is it really going to be better for them if they came in, like, ready for battle and din? Like, these people are, like, pretty on the edge of their seat. They're, like, walking on, like, they don't want to, like, go the easy route. they believe they're right.
But sometimes they don't know, right? Sometimes they don't know. So you have these people, these poor people coming in, they're, you know, fighting, and, you know, you get a month later, they just spent $50,000 on legal fees to get back $10,000 in a work.
So if you pointed out to them in the presentation that every other Rishon does, mention it, and if they don't want to mind, then, like, you've done your job.
Got
but
it.
If they're really hot-headed and, like, they want to do it, is it really going to be better to do the chart, like, beat them into submission to do Bishara in order to...
I don't know, beating. I don't see any beating in the Drisha.
It's a very strong moment.
Just his beers. Explain
yeah. Masbir lahem. Yeah. It's kicha bidvarim, right? That's the... So...
It struck me.
A little too strong.
I don't know. I guess Ned was a little out of it. Maybe the point.
Right. I hear where you're coming from. Ned, here. Okay.
So, he's a sneaky little kid, though. Where?
Everyone's beating up on the Drisha. What are you guys doing? Yeah, where's the sneaky Ukimta?
He interprets when the Dayan says Idina Baitu and Shara Baitu as this whole explanation, which really means that he's pushing for Shara.
Right.
Which supports Josh's reading, where it's really about the contextual case, where it's people, it's good for people, not like socially.
Ah, so it's got to be good for them.
Yeah.
Nicha, like literally for the Bali Din.
Yeah, and that's why it's
Lushan. So I guess the Nafkamina, the interesting Nafkamina you guys are raising is what happens if a Pshara is good for the system but not good for the parties. Is there still a mitzvah to offer Pshara in that case?
Yeah.
And you want to say maybe not.
Yeah, it's like obviously, it's so obviously clear that one person's in the right and maybe it's not.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting. Although I would say even if it's obviously clear that one person's in the right, I guess Nafkamina is like our Gemara and Daf Hey in the Runya type case. Right, so even there, well, is it a problem to say resolve it peacefully? Right, it's a good question. Yeah, let me think about that a little more. Does everybody hear Ned's distinction? Right, where in a case where it's not necessarily good for the party. Okay, let's just look at Simeon Bays again on the tour. He says, Kol Dayan Sheosep Shara Tamid Harizem Meshubach V'Yalav Nemar Emes Mishpat Shalom Shifti B'Sharecha. And what's Mishpat Yesh Po Shalom is Pshara. So here, the tour seems to come down pretty strong on the pro Pshara side. Because he's saying it's praiseworthy for a court to do Pshara very frequently. Everybody see that? So this actually sounds, and the Drisha leans on this to say that this formulation of the tour sounds stronger than the Maharal Prags just offer them the option. Right here it sounds like it's praiseworthy that a court does Pshara frequently. Yeah. I think I mentioned this, but when I was originally in the Yadin Kolel, and you hear something, oh, the Pshara this, Pshara that. Like, oh, just because these Dayanim are lazy and, like, don't know the halachos, so, oh, just shower everything. But now I'm coming around. Maybe I'm getting lazy in my old age. But I think just from the Makoros, like, you do really see that there's strong support for the pro-pshara view. And I think it fits nicely with just thinking about the role of courts primarily about resolving disputes, even din itself being about resolving disputes, fair resolution of disputes, not some metaphysical value in and of itself, etc., etc. Just a perspective. Okay, now, the Rimi L'Neil has a very interesting comment where he says that even the view that holds mitzvah livtsoa, of course, concedes that la'achar gmar din, it would be gezel to do pshara. Does everybody see that? So, la'achar gmar din, that they say yish ploni ata zaka, yish ploni ata chayiv, if you're going to be im yasu pshara v'yitlu min azakai k'tzas mimasha hayaroyilo ein lecha gezel gadol mizeh. That's within the view of mitzvah to do pshara. Everybody see that? So I think here you have to say something along the lines that this is about a hierarchy resolving it through pshara, resolving it through din, about what's preferable l'chatchila how you should resolve it. But once there's already a psak din, that changes it, and then there's already a clear assignment of rights. Right, so what we were saying for the anti-pshara view about the metaphysics being determined before you come to litigate is equally true of the pro-pshara view, but after gmar din. Right, because then the assignment of rights is already locked in stone. And then to do pshara, you'd be robbing them of their halachic rights. So just one way, I think it's just a nice way of precisifying or fleshing out further what we said right at the outset of Shir about the machlokas between the view of Pshara's Gezel and the view of Pshara's Mitzvah, about when do these legal rights become determined or viewed as if they're yours already. It's almost like a cum dina type of perspective. The view that holds that Pshara's Gezel says those rights are already ossified or locked in kodem coming to Bezdin, or once you come to Bezdin, not necessarily kodem coming to Bezdin. And the view that holds that Pshara's a mitzvah concedes that, but lachar gmar din. Okay, Shmuel, you have a...
If part of Pshara is that it's voluntary, even though the right is assigned, why doesn't that make it Gezel? For example, if like I decided...
Once it's voluntary.
Right, once it's voluntary.
Yeah.
Like, I own my laptop, I go want to do Pshara, like, whether Ned should get ownership of my laptop, partial ownership of my laptop. It might be stupid, but it's not Gezel.
Yeah.
Receives partial ownership of my laptop.
Yes, yeah, I think that Shmuel is making a very good point. This is like Ned's comment last year, right? Once you're thinking of Pshara as with the consent of the parties, how do you ever get Pshara being Gezel? Daniel, you want to answer that?
Yeah, I think maybe he's not actually saying that it's Gezel to be Pshara. I think he's saying it's Gezel for the best thing to start offering, tell them after they established it, we start pushing for Pshara to happen now. In that case,
Shmuel's saying, why is that Gezel? That's just like the used car salesman. He's not stealing from you.
Because at that point, they shouldn't be allegiance. Once you have them pushing for it, then you're starting to apply pressure, and then that might start.
Right, you have to say it's the applying pressure to do Pshara is where the Gezel comes in almost, right? You're trying to rob them of their halachic rights, and that's where it's as if you're stealing from them through that.
You said the used car salesman wasn't a good.
Yeah, so here it is again, right? So here, in this sense, it is a good analogy. Yes, agreed. I was going to say that your two points answer each other, right? Because your first point is like, how is it permissible for them to be so applying such pressure? Your second point is, how could it ever be Gezel if it's with the consent of the parties? And the answer to the second question is your first question.
Right.
Yeah, which is what Daniel's saying. Sorry?
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is similar along lines. Like, we saw that there was a big Shmuel in the court. She kind of said, like, oh, like, if the... Like Shofan's thing, which is like someone else, even after Mardin, a third party can encourage a Pshara, not in Basin. But if the problem with the Basin itself, it would says, yeah, it's just like a Heskin Das thing, because the people will be confused, they'll think that they actually have to go along with it. So it seems like there is like a stream of thought that's very sympathetic to like.
It's not true
to
your style.
It's encouraging things, it's unclear how optional it is.
Yeah, we would call it like it's like there's lack of informed consent, something like that, right? Because you're like in the pressure of the Dayanim, so it's not true. There's not true consent, which is what Daniel's getting at. Yeah, great. Okay, so I want to now just say a little more about characterizing Pshara. One other makar that speaks about the virtues of Pshara is tucked away in the Gemara in Shavuos Lamed Aleph. You wouldn't know it. It's not really a Pshara Gemara. The Gemara quotes a pasuk of Asher Lo Tov Oseh Ba'amav. What's an example of somebody who does no good for society? That's somebody who's Baba Harsha. Baba Harsha means you purchase the legal claim. Right, so you have a litigant who has a legal claim, then you sell it. The litigant sells the legal claim to a third party. You authorize that third party to collect it for you. You know, today there's all sorts of industries that specialize in this. You know, you purchase somebody's claim, right, and then you you could litigate it for your benefit. So Rashi says, why is it so bad to purchase claims? So here's the thought. You're misaber al riv lolo. You're getting involved in somebody else's fight. V'shema harisho noach lo, v'noach lipshara yoser mizeh. Maybe the original litigant would have been more amenable to do pshara, more so than this guy who's not authorized to do pshara with somebody else's money. I don't know why Rashi makes the second assumption that the purchaser of the claim is not authorized to settle. But let's grant that assumption. Rashi's saying the reason why it's wrong to sell legal claims is because it forecloses the possibility of Pshara, or it makes Pshara less likely. And that's why the Gemara criticizes this as a bad practice. So you just see that Rashi thinks that it's very good, or there's a halachic value in keeping open the possibility of Pshara as much as possible. Ned, you had a thought on that? Anybody else had a thought on that? Just a makor that speaks to the, like a nafgamina almost of mitzvah to do pshara. Okay. Now I want us to turn to a makor that already gives us, I think this is very insightful, it gives us perspective on what type of mitzvah shara is. Right, so we're going to try to characterize the mitzvah. And what do we get here? Who saw the Gemara Bava Metzia Daf Lamed? Who saw the Gemara Bava Metzia? Ezra. Just scream really loud, Ezra.
Do you want me to read?
No, you don't have to read the whole thing. You can just tell us the last line. Asher Yasun. Okay, so Asher Yasun in this pasuk here refers to Lefnei Mishuras Hadin, correct? What is Lefnei Mishuras Hadin? No. What's the concept of Lefnei Mishuras Hadin? Anybody want to? Yeah, going beyond the letter of the law. Right? Lefnim, Mishur, going beyond literally the line of the law. Correct? So what does it mean to go beyond the letter of the law? I think Mark gives us an example here. Damar Rabbi Yochanan. Yeah, so why was Yerushalayim destroyed?
Destroyed because people weren't following the Din
Torah. No. Got the double negative of the low Ella.
Some of these people were following strictly.
Exactly. So you inserted strictly here, but yes, the Gemara says Yerushalayim was destroyed because they adjudicated according to Din Torah. That's very, very striking Gemara.
They skipped to 7-3.
What?
They skipped to
7-3. Yeah, right. They went to Din. And then the Gemara says, wait a second, so what you're telling me that Din Torah is a bad thing? What's the Gemara? Eladina demagista ledainu? Should they have like adjudicated like thugs? Like what? What should they have done?
Magians.
What?
Like the Magians or something like that.
The who?
Magians.
Yeah, like have they adjudicated? Right. It seems like what they should have used some other like method of. Yeah. So what does it mean? Ela ema. Yeah. So why was the slime destroyed? Because the litigants insisted on litigating their legal rights rather than giving up their rights to do Lefnei Mishuras Hadin. Yes? Fair translation of the Gemara? Yeah? So, I mean, I think this is one of the Gemaras, like, were these words not written, right, you wouldn't have thought to say them. Correct?
I guess the Korban and Yerushalayim is like...
Big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So, how do you make sense of this? I think anybody who's a pro-din person can't make sense of this Gemara. There's literally no way to read this Gemara if you're a true pro-din in the sense that, you know, our real duty is to bring din down into the world, right? To resolve all disputes according to din. And you can't even view din as like this lichatchila, right? As Benji, you made the comment.
What din is lichatchila?
Yeah, about that, or was it Ariel? Okay. Was you, Benji?
I'm not exactly sure what point you're trying to make.
Al Shemita did name Al Din Torah, but they went straight to din. Who made that comment 2 minutes ago? Ariel. Yeah, Ariel.
Chapter 12. That Ari Shire put last week.
No, I didn't see it. What's that? Exactly. What?
He quoted the there's some story of farms in an old city, and he saw these kids, and there was a man carrying fruit, and the kids were discussing the Gemara whether or not they needed to help him in a
non-Jewish manner.
Wasn't it from person like that? Around said our kids in our community wouldn't know the Tosfot existed.
Right. But they would help him. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to tell you a story about my morning in Washington Square Park this morning. This Gemara is very striking. In fact, the Gemara seems to say it's problematic to insist on din, and preferable to go lifnim mishuras hadin. The Gemara doesn't tell us exactly what Lefnei Mishuras Hadin means here. Like, what's the application of Lefnei Mishuras Hadin? But there's one Rishon who connects it explicitly to our Sugya. Who's that? Rashi does, not explicitly on that Gemara, he connects Lefnim Yishuras Hadin. Yeah, the Riyaz. Daniel, you're right too. But he doesn't say this Gemara is a Raya to Pshara. Even though you're right, if you connect the dots of what Lefnim Yishuras Hadin is, according to Rashi, it connects directly. But the Kuntras of Riyaz, as Zechariah said, says exactly that. It's such an awesome mucker. He says, Amandam, this is the Riyaz in Sanhedrin Hamabez. Amandam or Mitzvah Levtsoa, he holds the Mitzvah, blah, blah, blah. We'll see, we'll come back to this in a moment. Af Bishap Sharahi Midas Adayanim, Yeshba Mitzvah, Shahar Bepamim, Hu Kasha Lele Chaladin. Sometimes it's like bad to pursue din or to apply din. Kida Amrinan, Lo Charva Yushalayim, Ela Shehemidu Dinim, Al Din Torah. So he explicitly cites this Gemara in Bava Metzia as a makar that it's bad to do din and that pshara is preferable. Lefikach notlan adayanim reshus mi bali din umatilin aleihem pshara. So the Riyaz thinks that Gemara is basically saying Yushalayim was destroyed because people didn't do pshara. Instead, they insisted on adjudicating according to their particular legal rights. How's that for a hot take, Josh?
It still doesn't make sense how that can trigger the Korban Yerushalayim. That's like, even if it wasn't preferable, it's not like din is like evil, but like, I don't know.
No?
Well, I don't think din is evil. But.
Guys, you good, Josh? Yeah?
That's right.
You're getting support on this one? Okay, notice also that, but I think that's a very strong, this Gemara should strongly motivate you towards Pshara, if you haven't been on the Pshara train yet.
It's also kind of like shocking that like, you showed it, and like, the Gemara are like comfortable admitting, like, yeah, like, Kasha, like, they all did. Like, it's just like, sometimes this is not a good practical solution.
I want to come back to that for
it's
a second.
It's like, you're allowed to say, isn't that like, aren't we like, want like, oh, he like, you know, like, do we want us to say like, oh, like our Torah is like good, and we're saying, yeah, it's like good ideas. It doesn't like work. Like that's not like a wrong thing to say.
No, I mean, Mara says it. Right. Well, I would just say that why can't Pshara be part of Chachmaschem Uvinaschem Le'Ne'agoyim?
So, in economic, that you have to like readjust everything. It's like, no, it's not.
Right. Well, that's the point. Right. That's my anti-neg.
It's like a rebound thing. It's like, we know, let's throw Farsh Mishpatim in the garbage.
That was my anti-Nedj discussion on Tuesday. Right, anti-Nedj opinion on Tuesday, which was that, yes, if you think of Pshara as this extra halakhic thing, then you run into problems like that, right? You're saying, oh, it means like halakha is not enough to keep the Beis HaMikdash standing, something like that. Whereas if you say that there's this thing, din, right, and Pshara, both of which are necessary to keep the system, you know, well-oiled and good, and then, of course, it's not so problematic. Gemara is just saying that if you just do Zrayim, you'll have a bad society. Right, if you just do Kachim, you'll have a bad society. Like, no, you need all these things together, and so one of the things that you need in addition to Din is Pshara, and that's what keeps, like, the Choshen Mishpat alive and well and like as a good system. No? That was a lot of my of that footwork on Tuesday. Ned, do you want to respond?
I'm saying in this setup, Din is valuable for its ideational content that we can apply to the Pshara.
Yes. So, and in the cases where for whatever reason people can't agree on, like where it's impossible to do Pshara. Yes.
Even if they don't agree, it still comes from the.
Yes. I agree. A good pshara has to consider the rules of din to understand like what's fair and what's a good resolution in these circumstances. So, like, if we didn't have a conception of property rights, like I wouldn't even know how to start resolving the dispute in a good way between parties. Or you need some antecedent conception of where things
are. That's what they're thinking, right?
But
it's almost time that is what they think.
Time and mitzvos is always confusing, and when people say Tanya Mitzvos, I think of used car salesman. No, it's one of those things that has all sorts of connotations. But you mean, as it becomes...
We have to look at the rationale for any specific din and apply that for purposes of...
Maybe, yeah. I don't even think you have to get to the rationale. I think you could even just think about what are the rights assigned to the parties. What rights do you have under din to figure out what's a reasonable compromise. What are you compromising? You're compromising on the legal claims. So you have to know what the antecedent claims and rights are to figure out a good pshara, right?
But they could just, pshara could just be anything they agree to.
Good, right. It could be almost arbitrary. That bothers you?
I think that's problematic. Meaning, I don't know.
So do you think it's problematic for the parties to agree to anything?
I mean, I think it's equally problematic, yeah. One, two.
So you think it's problematic for me to not sue the guy who gives me a fender bender? Once you concede it's not problematic for me to not sue the guy, why can't I say, Josh, sure, you're a good guy. Just tell us what we should do.
In my head, it's like, because then they come to some conclusion that's like, just so objectively incorrect, but you're saying that there's no such thing.
Right. Saying just like, I don't think it's objectively incorrect for me to not sue the guy. Why is it objectively incorrect for me to say, look?
Well, what if one guy?
I'm hot-headed. It's my new car. So let's ask somebody who's not hot-headed.
Let's take this situation, right? So I am like, I'm a new driver, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I hit your car, and you like are like, oh, this is my favorite car. I love this car, whatever. And you like, and then like, there's some kind of distortion, right? Where I feel really bad. I think I did whatever, and I don't know anything. So I just say, okay, let me give you like, you know, $10,000, even though there's only like $2,000 of damage, and that's our charge.
Is that bad, you're saying?
That, right, if it leads to extortion, that's...
Okay, so I think, but then, so you might say there's got to be rules of pshara, and people talk about, I mean, the poskim do talk about what's, you know, some rule, could there be a pshara vitalis, and... So I don't think just because you're going for pshara means anything goes. But it definitely has, it's got to be less regulated in some way, right?
Right. So I guess that's, I'm just raising the concern that it could, theoretically, there are ways that it could go.
Yeah. So I think you could say, well, it's got to be fair and reasonable.
Right. Okay.
But then by what standards, right? By like armchair ethics standards almost.
Well, that's what I'm...
You have to be okay with that.
That's what's kind of bothering you. Then you get a little, as you try to define fair and reasonable, you kind of get in a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant responding to... To Shmuel and Ned, that's right. Din is necessary to inform what's fair and reasonable under pshara.
But then, in your case number one, you're actually asking the litigant to know.
Maybe. So, even when din's not important, it's still very important. Okay. Ned?
I just wanted to point out that perhaps, pshara, we said, is already subject to. Be something for whatever they want, but the idea that it's only informed by din principles, even though it's not necessarily din proper. I mean, I sent that gemara to the Shir chat yesterday.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it when you look for me sure as a din.
Yeah, so there seem to be broader principles independent of din that can inform Shir as well.
Right, so you might say fair and reasonable even by a standard outside of din.
Yeah.
I think that's okay. Right, good. So let's just look quickly at Rashi and the Ramban. As Daniel points out, they explicitly link pshara to lefnim yishuras hadin. Rashi al Torah in Dvarim Vav says that Yashar Batov is pshara lefnim yishuras hadin. So to my mind, what that means is that the Torah gives you all these rights, but then it tells you that it's not necessarily a good thing to assert these rights or to insist on them. Oftentimes it's commendable to go to offer supererogatory conduct and not assert your rights, right? To waive them, let them go. That's how I understand this Rashi. So pshara, agreeing to let the court impose a decision, or even you settling, is a form of lifnim yishuras hadin. And the Ramban has that also. Achi kanes b'zeh hapshara of lifnim yishuras hadin. We're going to talk more about this Ramban on Sisu Yashar HaTov later on. Because it's very fascinating claims over here. When we talk more generally about lefnim yishuras hadin and its enforceability, we'll come back to this Ramban. Okay, so that's... I think these sources clearly speak about pshara in favor of pshara as, you know, this higher form of conduct, correct? Right? Do we all agree that lefnim yishuras hadin is better than conduct based in din? Right, so I think the lefnim yishuras hadin characterization of pshara elevates it above the din characterization. Let's now turn to the discussion of requiring the consent of the parties to do pshara. I think this makes a lot of sense. The idea here is that the halacha gives you certain rights under din. Yeah, certain entitlements. It's wrong for a court to come and rob you of those entitlements bal karcha, against your will. So these rights are yours to, if you want, you could assert them. No one can take them away from you. But the halacha does think it's commendable for you to agree to forego them and license a bez din to do pshara. Do you see that? So they're yours, and you, these are your legal entitlements, you could assert them, but it's not always good to assert them. And that's why pshara is not an automatic power that bez din has. It's really up to you to consent to go lifnim bishura sadin, to forego three, and empower the bez din to do two. That's the Kuntres Riyaz is explicit about this. If the pshara is the dayanim deciding the pshara, that they need the reshus from the bali din. This is implicit in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which talks about does pshara need a kinyan. Even if pshara doesn't need a kinyan, it seems like the parties have to authorize the bez din to do this. This distinction leads the Riyaz to say a pretty radical chiddush, which gets picked up by the Shach. So this idea that pshara in the Gemara is about pshara with the consent of the parties. Why? What chiddush does the Riyaz have based off that? About qualifying this machlokes about pshara as a mitzvah and pshara as an iser. He says this whole debate is about which type of pshara.
Kind of shara, which they get their shus beforehand, they kind of just like they hand over all the rights
that
are done, and they like force it top down.
Yeah, exactly.
Shara, kind of number one, where all the parties are still involved, and they're just kind of coming to a mutual agreement. That he says that's just havala shalom. That's not
even shara. That's right. So the Riyaz's chiddush is that this whole debate in the Gemara about shara being gazel, shara being a mitzvah, preferable, neutral, etc. is about pshara that the dayanim are going to define. They'll say, this is what we think is the fair resolution. Then you have a debate. Is that a mitzvah or not? So it's at stage two type pshara, right? Trying to get the parties to empower the bez din to impose it. But a stage one pshara, which is the parties themselves to settling, literally a settlement, where they define the terms of the settlement, that, according to everybody, is preferable. Right? There's not a view out there that says that's us or problematic. And in fact, the dayanim could work to offer a settlement and encourage the parties to accept that settlement. Does everybody see that? There's a difference between the dayanim imposing a ruling of their settlement and the dayanim saying, here's what we think is fair. Would you guys agree to this? So if the parties are in control, according to everybody, that's a bigger mitzvah than doing din. That's the Riyaz's claim. So he says, "Aval imhi midas bali dinin mehin yodim inyan hapshara misratzin ba." If the parties know about the content of the pshara and they consent to it, even la'achar gemar din, you could appease them to be mochel each other, which is such a radical claim, right? So the Beis Din could say, "Here's our psak, but we think it would be really great if you guys could." You know, settle with in this and this way. That he thinks is a mitzvah. That great. He says, "Masha osen midas bali dinin." When you're working with the consent of the litigants, ein ze bitzua ela hava shalom. That's like pure peace bringing. The ein lecha mitzvah gedola mizu. Yeah. So what do you make of that, guys? It's pretty strong form, Ned.
That's exactly the opposite of reading the Gezel. It's completely dependent. So I read yesterday. It's completely dependent on the consent. Once you have consent, it's all.
Yeah, if you have their true consent where they control the particular outcome of the settlement, that's kosher according to everybody. And preferable over din, right? So that puts more pressure on the view that thinks that, you know, there's it's even better to just apply din in the most cases. The reality is saying nobody entertains that. Getting the parties to settle on their own is preferable according to everybody.
So what is the Gemara that he speaks of?
What
is the Gemara Din in this case?
Even the Gemara Din, when they say, here's our psak, this is under rights, this is what everybody's entitled to. But you know, we think a good settlement to make everybody happy would be something else.
What are they doing with the big then if they already decided to set forth the terms on their own?
No, sometimes you can encourage the settlement after there's a psap.
No, I mean, they have to do it themselves. The whole point is to save one.
Oh, no. This is not a chronological hierarchy. I mean, it could be. It's more of a axiological hierarchy about, in value, which one is preferable. So you can go for a game, but it might be preferable to settle it differently. This actually happens all the time, lawyers say, because let's say you win an award of $1 million against me. I say, haha, try to collect it. Right? It'll take you 10 years to collect this because I'm not going to pay, and then I'll have to get a lien on my house, and then it's only collectible once my house is sold. Like, enforcing is really difficult. So I say, but if you want to settle for half of that, I'll write you a check right now. So people all the time settle after there's already a psak din. And the riyaz is saying, that's really great. Right? If you're willing to settle on your own, like, who cares what the psak says?
That's exactly an example like of what I was saying before, no? That shara only works if you don't get extorted. If you have a way of doing shara and then saving $500, then...
Yeah, that's not so kosher.
I
guess it depends if you're really...
It is going to be honest.
Right, if you're really consenting to it, it doesn't matter. Right.
But that comes back to, like, does the fact that you said okay mean that you're actually consenting?
Yeah, but here it's not imposed by the dayanim, right? I mean, the
that
other litigant, right?
To, like, how much I need the money.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Josh.
I'm just, like, to maybe point out explicitly, this works perfectly for the problematic line in Hargamar. But, like, even if you say that there was, like, a psak and he's trying to get them to do shara.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's why I wrote over here after the shah. So let me just say the shah quotes this in Simen Yud Beis. So the shah quotes this Riyaz Ladina in Shulchan Aruch. And that's what I wrote over here. So we should look into our sugya, what was going on. And I think Josh is exactly right to say this works beautifully with our sugya. Because Rava was saying, look, there's an offer on the table. Why don't you guys go work it out on those terms? So there, he wasn't imposing the pshara. He was allowing the parties to do the pshara on their own, right? Zeal the fayes b'mayde fayes. Zeal paise b'mayde fayes. Go appease him for the amount that he's willing to be appeased for. So that's worked out between the parties.
But you're still getting upset also.
But if not, then I'll paskin this other one. Right? So I think in Argamar's case, this is he's just saying, here's a good pshara, why don't you do it? Otherwise, you're going to be on the hook. Yes?
I was trying to say that, even if you say that he was literally
paskining, right. Oh, so he's, right, so...
Because it's still like, after paskining it, you can still settle.
That's even sharper than what I was thinking. So here, Josh is very sharp reading. Josh is saying, there's like a disjunctive claim by Rava. He's saying, either settle or I'll paskin. I was viewing that as a, if you don't settle, then I'll paskin. Josh is saying very sharply, like, no, no, no. He was paskining right there. The psak is, da'ina l'cha k'drav huna, you have to pay half. But still, there's a settlement on the table. Pursue it. Very ingenious reading by Josh. Can I see Josh's reading?
We went from, like, no one agreeing to, like, getting, like, Josh to agree. It's not a smooth reading.
No? Textual.
Because it's disjunctive? Because it's V-Lav?
I mean, it's the wrong order, and... Yeah.
But that's my point. It's not necessarily a chronological order. Right? He's saying, look, here's the din.
Okay.
The din is, so you got to pay... What?
That's not what he said.
Because the order is saying.
He didn't say, here's the din. Yeah.
But it could be he's saying, settle. Because if not, I'm going to paskin X. So Josh is saying, that means he's paskining X, right? What does that mean he will paskin X? He could write it down. He's telling him what the psak's going to be. That's a psak.
I like the reading, yeah.
What?
I like the idea.
You like the idea? You're still thinking of first of all the line in the Gemara?
Let's
look at the line in the Gemara for a second. To defend Josh's ingenious read, let's say.
Like the, you know, like future.
Yeah, that's a...
Yeah. Asal kind of drama. I'm really zeal paise my defias. The elo, the ina lachadina kerafuna libu wc.
Why
is it future tense? Right?
Those are the elo, the ina, like.
And if not, Yes, but in Josh's defense, I would say. So da'ina lecha could just mean like I'll enforce it. Right, I'm going to enforce the ruling. But Josh makes a good point. He's saying, well, what does that mean? He's basically telling you how he's going to paskin. What is that? How is that different from actually paskining? Right, so it's a little bit of a...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right, like what does it mean that I'm going to paskin this way? If I'm going to paskin that way, that means I'm paskining now that this is the psak in the case. Right, so maybe it means better than da'ina lecha as in I'll enforce.
No, psak is actually made yet.
I'll issue a judgment. So I see you could go the other way. That's how I was reading it. But let me say this. So if you want to go with a non-Josh reading, so you'll say there's a chronological priority, right? So settle. If not, then I'll paskin this way. You still might think you need the riyaz because he definitely knows what Hefan and didn't know that. Right? So why is it okay for him to offer a settlement over the din, so you can say, okay, mitzvah l'tzoa, like the Anorah says. Right? But even if you don't go in for a strong mitzvah l'tzoa view, Josh is saying the riyaz helps. Because even the views that say aser l'tzoa concede that if it's a b'may defayis, if this is what the parties themselves are happy to accept, that's a mitzvah according to everybody. Right? So that's how I was taking your comment, Josh, the first time. Josh then is going further and saying, no. Actually, the logical form of I will paskin is equivalent of I am paskining. And even so, it's consistent to impose a settlement because of the riyaz and the shah.
And what's with the drisha also, where the drisha is all about convincing them to do something. It's not necessarily, you're changing their will, you're not telling them to shah, you're telling them, this is the best thing for you to do.
Yeah, I was saying here. But here he's not asking them to empower him to do pshara. Right, the whole point is that he's not being mefasher.
Yeah, meaning
he's saying, look, there's a pshara already on the table, why don't you accept it?
The drisha is saying it's sort of before you make a decision, you have to help them just reason out what is
the pshara. So he's saying, look, the mitzvah, he's saying, like, do you want pshara? Here's pshara. If not, we'll do din.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting application also. Yeah, good stuff. I want to make one more diak in the riyaz. Then we could save the bulk, the cases, the special cases for next year. Check out this last line in the Riyaz. So he quotes that Gemara in Bava Metzia. On this phrase, V'afal pisha apshara hi midas hadayanim yesh ba mitzvah shahar be pa'amim hu kasha lelech al adin. Cites Bava Metzia. L'fikach Noto Yanam Rishus, Matilan Alehem Shara, key phrase, Lefiha Inyan, Ulfiha Tzorech, Ulfiha Zman, Ulfi Bali Adinim. So I want to know what's going on in this phrase. Sorry, what's going on in this phrase? And what's going on in this phrase? Harbe Pamim Hukasha Lele Chaladin. And then this Shara Lefiha Inyan, Lefiha Tzorech, Lefiha Zman, Ulfi Bali Adinim. So two important planes here. Notice that the Riyaz here is saying sometimes Pshara is a mitzvah even when it's imposed by the Dayanim, right? Without the parties agreeing to the particular terms. Why is Pshara a mitzvah, Ned?
It's textualist.
Yeah, tell us more about that. So, what does this phrase mean in your view? Sometimes it's difficult to go after din?
And
what does it mean?
Can't encapsulate every single circumstance. There
yeah.
are certain cases that need to be judged on their own.
Yeah, we're really beating up on din today. I think this is one. I bar-ilan this phrase in different permutations, see if anybody else has it. Like kasha lele kachar adin, I couldn't find other good usages of it. You do have midrashim that talk about, you know, Hashem wanted to create the world of midas adin, and then the world couldn't have stood if it was just midas adin. So you do have like midrashim that beat up on this idea of strict judgment. But I think he's saying that din itself is somehow what, Ned?
Contextualist.
Well, din's not contextualist.
Oh, sorry, it's...
It fails to account for the varying context of human life. Something like that. Right? Sometimes just din is kasha lele chala din. Like, din is bad. Like, din is hard. Din is bad. Or din doesn't get the right answers. that on its own, that phrase on its own doesn't say all of that, but when you connect it with the last line, it says, therefore we do pshara, lefi ha'inyan, lefi hatzorech, lefi azman, lefi balei dinim, which just sounds super contextualist, right? Din can't capture all the varied circumstances of life and different types of disputes. So pshara allows us to get to more nuanced or flexible solutions that account for the type of dispute, the needs of the day, the contingencies of time, and the stature of the Bali Din. Maybe one's super rich, maybe one's super poor, right? Maybe one's a really bad guy, one's a really good guy. So all those types of considerations could allow Shara settlement to be flexible, while Din wouldn't. Yeah, so is that a cool reading of the Riyaz? So there's a thought that Din is somehow maybe too broad or too categorical, too inflexible. Like, it can't achieve justice in all the types of cases that we need to achieve it. And that's why Pshara is really important, according to the Riyaz. And that's how he seems to explain the Gemara in Bav Metzia. Why the Gemara says, why was Din L'chorva Yishalayim L'chorva Yishalayim L'chorva Yishalayim L'chorva Torah? They're like, yeah, like, the Din Torah doesn't seem to exhaust the necessities of justice or proper adjudication. Josh, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, is this similar, maybe somebody like talking about like why the Jews should have a king, like when they still didn't?
Yeah, Mishpat HaMelech.
Yeah, and like the Ron.
The Josh is around.
Yeah. Like, yeah, by Din, nobody's ever going to get killed, but like sometimes you need a king to go execute people.
Totally, I think it's a very similar type of idea. Yeah, and the same people who say that Pshara is a non-halachic principle say that the Mishpat HaMelech is a non-halachic principle, and they're wrong for the same reasons, right? Well, in my view, right? I think that's exactly right. There's the idea that the system as a whole is only complete with these different factors. Ed?
But halakha is somewhat contextualist. Din is somewhat contextualist. Other similar considerations.
Yeah, but according to the Riyaz, I guess not sufficiently contextualist, right? Does everybody agree with the reading of the Riyaz, by the way? That's what he's getting at in those lines? Or is this a bad reading? Daniel, you like the reading?
No.
Sounds right. Anybody disagree with the reading of the Riyaz? How are you disagree?
It's just shocking.
It's shocking? Really?
Like, I think it's correct. But I think it's like
it's a strong view?
Like, we should post it on the walls of a doorway of a basement.
All we've done is like read Mikoro seriously, and everyone here seems to be so ill at ease. Like, nothing here was my view, right? Where my radical views were just about the economics of the Jewish community, not the Hasugya. But everybody here seems so ill at ease. Like, we literally just read a Gemara Bava Metzia, a Riyaz. Why is it?
Like, it's like a Nassim Slipkin case. Like, no, we don't pass them like those half of Rishonim who had this view. Like, those are
not part of the
subject.
Interesting.
No, I'm just trying to understand why these makoros are so inconsistent with people's intuitions. If these are basic makoros on the sugya, these aren't even like strange makoros that we dug up in the Kovei Shitas Kamai. We have to stop. Well, so we'll pick up next time. I'll give out more direction for the cases of when Diane can do Pshara without the consent of the parties. And we'll definitely wrap this up in the next year. All right, good afternoon, guys.